Sam was raving about how hilarious these companion characters are and stuff. And I was like, oh, I didn't know there were companion characters because I killed everybody. Scotch. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 230 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Skeleton Seth, and I'm the Bones Cracker.
the Bones Cracker. I'm a damned soul, and I have a damned soul.
Oh, I'm Sam Hain, the Gaelic festival that preceded Halloween.
Still celebrated by Wiccans and some other folks to this
very day. Spooky.
Yeah. Whoa.
Watch out.
I'm spooked.
Didn't see that one coming.
This is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is Halloween 2019. That rhymed. But also, this episode comes out like 6 days later, that's so true. It's going to be a little bit disorienting probably because if you're listening, you're probably like, it's turkey time. I'm ready. I got my turkey.
And actually, if you've been to any stores, it's Christmas time.
Apparently.
So. Yeah.
It creeps closer every year.
Is this something that happens everywhere, or is the Christmas creep worldwide, or is it mostly in America?
This is what I'm talking about, though, because it's literally Halloween, and all you can talk about is Christmas right now.
They succeeded.
Terrible. It's like a mind control device.
Yeah. Christmas's branding is on point. Christmas needs a Twitter feed. Mm-hmm. Also, before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be profanity in this show, and it's going to be real spooky.
Mm-hmm. Lots of cursing.
If you're a child, then apparently you can't listen.
But you can trick-or-treat, which kind of, frankly, evens out at the end of the day. Yeah. You don't get to trick-or-treat as an adult unless you have a child with you. It's like they're your chaperone to be able
to get candy. Have to work to trick-or-treat because you got to like get a costume. So isn't this child labor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can't just go to someone's house just as you are and just have some candy.
Right.
You got to work for it.
You got to work for it. And I feel like they're probably not reporting that.
No.
On their
taxes. That needs to probably go on taxes somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got to report that candy to the IRS.
There's a certain – the question is really like what's the point of no return where you can no longer trick or treat without being a weirdo?
I feel like even when you're a teen, people start being like,
people start getting mad about
it. Yeah. We had some people get mad. I think it was like 16 or so. I went and did it with some friends. Like we were like, "Oh, let's go do it again."
Is it
everyone's
like,
"What are you doing?"
I think it's once you can have buy your own candy.
That's probably what it is.
I think that's the point.
Yeah,
because they're like, "What are you, freeloader? Get out of here!"
Because now you should just be buying your own candy or buying candy for the kids who can't buy their own candy.
Mm. Ah, that sounds like socialism.
That's true.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you should have to work for your candy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we like to also thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscash.net who are giving us money. So thanks a lot for that.
Mm-hmm. We also like to be supported by all of our other supporters everywhere else supporting us in all the ways that they support us.
That's right. Thanks a lot, guys. We appreciate
it. Yep.
Let's talk about life, specifically the Outer Worlds, not Wilds. I want to clarify.
That damn game name because
it just
Outer
slips
Wilds
off of all brains.
Outer Wilds came out a while ago.
Did it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah. It was 2 months ago, 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And then...
It was recently, but not like...
Mm-hmm. And that was also a spacefaring adventure game.
Okay? Was it?
Oh, it was. And then it involved like time loops or something. Mm. And then Outer Wilds, not Outer Worlds. Wait.
Outer Worlds.
I literally can't, like every time I say it now, it just blends. It's one of the two.
Outer Worlds came later.
I'm just going to call it OW. OW.
But the other one's also abbreviated.
Yeah, but you know what I mean when I say OW. Okay, so this new game, OW, comes out. Uh-huh. And it's made by Obsidian, who made Fallout New Vegas.
Yes.
Which was very good, for those who recall, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And this game, basically, it feels like, just sort of to me, it feels like a modern version of a Fallout 3.
Yeah, and 4. One that isn't just gray and sepia.
Yeah, it's so colorful, fun. It has a lot of the same sort of, you know, capitalism destroys everything, sorts of undertones in it, or overtones.
Yeah, it's not super about it.
That's kind of the whole game.
But the extent to which the writing is so good, it's one of the few games where I'm just like, I'm actually playing it just because I want to help out my little terrible crewmates who have all sorts of issues, and I just love them. I just love every single one of them, except for Ellie. Ellie just annoys me.
And so this is one of those kinds of games that you can play kind of however you want, mm-hmm. and the designers sort of came up with ways that you could really screw things up and the game would still be okay.
Well, so let's talk about a few of our experiences so far. So it's an RPG, right? So again, for those not somehow acquainted with that style. So basically what that means is you take on the role of some entity and then your choices generally cause some permanent change. Anything from just to the character to the actual world. And so the more interesting versions of these are where you have a sort of a cascade and a branching tree of effects where you sort of can end up with a completely different story than someone else ended up with. But those, of course, are also very hard to build. So
yes,
this happens to be a very good one of the sort of kind of branching style, I guess, because you can do a lot of things very differently and also get different outcomes. And I've been reading – I've been keeping up with it and sort of like reading some stuff online, and people are having completely different things go down and like the very intense sort of conflicts that I was in that I didn't think there was another way to do because I just assumed there wasn't.
Yeah.
I was like, damn.
Yeah, and I've been trying to not find out. I want to finish the game however I end up doing it. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, go read up on stuff so I can get a sense of what could have happened. Because there have already been moments where I got through a dialogue tree and there was one choice that I kind of hesitated at. And I was like, do I want to go down whatever path this is going to go down? And then I didn't. And then just the back of my mind, now I'm just like, what would have happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would have happened if I chose that option?
Replay value. Yeah.
And so the thing that supports that then, of course, is that your builds for your character are very specific as well. So I went full charm. I was just like, I'm going to be sweet talking every single person and I'm going to have these companions with me because I heard they're fun. So I'm going to have these companions with me and I'm mainly going to have them be the ones who murder everything. Mm-hmm. Right? Because if they die, they just get back up after combat. So that's cool because
– That's good for them.
It's good for them and good for me because if I die, I don't get back up after combat. Kind of a different situation, right?
Yeah.
So – that's been my strategy so far, and it's been very amusing because you can talk people into doing almost anything, frankly.
Yeah, you really like because I'm also doing that. So, so far, like I haven't met a situation yet that I couldn't talk my way into or out of. Even to the point of I can just go pick someone's lock right in front of them, right?
Yeah.
If I do it really fast, like if it's like an easy one, so I can get it open before they stop me, then they'll ask me what I'm doing, and I can just lie and say nothing, and they're just like, okay.
Well, yeah, I think you lose a little bit of reputation.
You do lose some reputation,
but then they're always like, "Well, next time, you know, be more careful."
it's hilarious.
I love that stuff.
So my favorite thing so far is that if you get these companions with you, and then you actually get to trigger abilities on them if you have a certain level of speech skill.
I haven't even tried those yet. I unlocked that, and I haven't even touched those.
It's commands. Just a button, C or V.
I know. I've looked at them right in the corner of my screen. So I just haven't done it.
So all you do is when you're targeting an enemy out there, then you just hit one of those buttons, and your companion does their like special move. But they do basically a kill cam during this time. And it's just so fun to watch. Like it's because it's this little sort of cutscene, but the camera's always in a slightly different place, and the camera is clearly trying to like pick a good spot.
Yeah, because it's a really hard problem to solve.
Yes, they do a very good job of it for the most part. And even when they don't, it's hilarious because like they'll just pick a complete wrong spot. But it's really fun to see your companions and then just go up and like do some sick special move on someone while screaming what is basically a slogan of theirs. And it's been just wildly entertaining to me.
Yeah, my
outer
favorite
wildly entertaining. Outer Wild.
My favorite Outer Worlds. My favorite is
can you make puns about
it? Yeah, it's terrible.
Is the first companion you get whose name is Parvati or Parvati or I'm not sure the pronunciation, but different characters say it differently, so I'm not quite sure. But yeah, she has a big lightning hammer.
Yeah.
And then when you send her after somebody, she just goes, "I see a nail!" And then she flies through the air and just crushes them with this hammer and lightning explodes everywhere. I think it hits everybody around too. Everybody's stunned.
What happens if you change her weapon?
So they always have their special skill.
Oh,
so they would like whip out this hammer.
So that's independent of their weapon slot.
Yeah. Now my strategy, first thing, was I came into it saying, this is a role-playing game. And so sometimes you can like choose some things about your character just sort of personally. Mm-hmm. And I decided that my character is just going to kill everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's a personality trait.
It's a personality trait that I imbued into my character. And because I thought of it as sort of like an interesting challenge of seeing like how well does the game actually handle this? Like if I just completely ignore everything that they're trying to get me to do – anytime a new character comes up and starts talking to me or whatever it is, it's go time and it's just a fight to the death. Mm-hmm. And I got pretty far. I cleared out the entire first planet of life. at least I thought I did. Because then afterwards, Sam was raving about how hilarious these companion characters are and stuff. And I was like, oh, I didn't know there were companion characters because I killed everybody. And then I
was like, hey, want to be your friend? You're like,
Well, nobody ever said anything to me. They just ran and screamed a lot.
That's true. Yeah.
And then
as you were murdering them.
Yeah.
No one stopped and was like, but I wanted to be your friend.
I wanted to be your friend. Yeah, but it was kind of a horrifying realization because, of course, my first playthrough, I played the whole game like this, but I played the first couple of hours, and I distinctly remember fighting certain named characters and stuff. And then in my second playthrough, I went more of like the charisma charm thing, and I'm like making friends with everybody. And I'm realizing like I'm now like making friends with all these companions who I definitely remember killing the first time around.
So they seared their faces into your soul and murdered them, huh?
Yeah.
Heavy burden.
I would say it's equally entertaining playing it in both ways, but just for very different reasons.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when there's a dialogue option in these games as far as what a skill you can use, because actually in basically every single game I've played previous to this one, they did nothing to actually bring the dialogue skills in any meaningful way into the combat. Mm-hmm. Which always just sucked because there usually actually weren't that many. There weren't that many options for the speech skills, and then of course you're always fighting stuff. Like the fighting is sort of the core.
Of the game, yeah.
And so it was always just really frustrating because I always wanted to do the sort of silver tongue character, but the cost was so high.
Yeah.
And this is the first game I played where actually it feels basically overpowered because
it really does.
When you get your companions and you get like all this stuff going with them.
One of the effects is cower.
Yeah.
Of a high speech skill, and so then you'll start fighting somebody, they just sort of like duck and cover their heads, and they just do that for a while
because you scare.
Just kind of just lay.
You're just so persuasive, You're so persuasive, you scare them to death.
Yeah, that intimidating persona.
Yeah, and so it's been a very fun experience overall. I've been very impressed with how they've handled it. So I couldn't recommend it enough, honestly.
So definitely play Outer Worlds. It's on the Epic Store. And if you go to the Epic Store, it'll just be like the big giant banner on the front page. So,
Outer Wilds might also be good.
It's also on the Epic Store.
And it's also on the Epic
Store. The Outer Wilds could be good. We don't know, but we have been playing the Outer Wilds. So, all right. Otherwise, studio news. We have a level head patch coming out. Let's talk about it. This is our 4-week patch.
It's coming out on podcast day.
Coming out
the day this podcast comes out. Which means you could say everything about it because
we can reveal.
There's no secrets anymore.
There's a huge list of patch notes, though. I don't know.
This is going to be a weird one because this is going to be the longest we've gone without deploying a patch to the existing players. And this patch won't probably feel any bigger than the previous ones. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more stuff in it, but they're just like a lot of optimizations and bug fixes. And like this has given us the time to fix. We've had some bugs on the roster since March that have just been kind of chilling there.
Before early access. We knew about these.
We've known about them, but we haven't quite had the breathing room to work on them. Yeah. And so my hope is that actually for most people, they don't really notice much of anything in this patch because most of these bugs are not hitting everybody.
Yeah.
Right? They're like a lot of weird edge cases and stuff. No, but this is all part of the plan of getting the game to a stable point so that when we do fully launch it, then most of the issues are dealt with so that we don't get absolutely crushed by a cascade of bug reports.
Yeah, and we lived that life post-Crashlands, and it was not fun.
It's bad life.
That's what we're trying to not have to do again.
Yeah. And during Crashlands beta, we had to fix 2,000 bugs that we didn't know about, which sucked a lot. So we don't want to do that again. Mm. Hopefully it's like 1,500 this time.
Yeah, I'd settle for that.
A good target.
Yeah, so as far as new stuff that we have coming in, I mean, there's still quite a bunch of either improvements or sort of new twists on stuff. One of my favorite ones is actually just the reusable checkpoints. So you can now put a checkpoint down and then touch it again.
The end.
Surprise, and now you're re-checkpoint at that point. This is going to open up all sorts of soft lock opportunities. I hope you all are excited to accidentally have to restart the entire level now at various points.
Yeah.
But it would also save some space. And then also, I don't know, it's just one of those nice like consolidated features that people have been asking for a while that we'll be able to deliver. Because basically they just act like a save point now that you get to refresh, which is super nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there were definitely some points in the campaign. It's generally when you're trying to get bug pieces and stuff, where like you get to the thing and then you have to make a decision. Do I get the checkpoint now and then have to like always go back and get the bug piece and then maybe die? Or do I take a chance and try to get the bug piece and be able to redo this whole thing over here, but then get the checkpoint after that? So it kind of takes that away.
Yeah, which I'm not necessarily going to always replace because, that's part of the fun. Is it? I don't know. It's something. It's part of something.
It is part of something.
It's part of something.
Yeah.
Yep. And then otherwise, yeah, just lots of optimizations. And we've had to put a lot of time into very weird, esoteric, platform-specific problems.
Let's talk about the data loss bug. That talk gibberish.
Shout out to talk gibberish.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So
managed to replicate finally.
So the problem in the high level was basically players would sometimes save their level, like you do when you're building a level, and then they would later load it and find that some things were not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
It was like certain properties on certain items would be just like universally reset to the defaults.
And now when we're talking about some of these players who do a lot of this advanced work, they would have, you know, hundreds of switches in their level.
And all of a sudden, they're all reset.
They're all just reset. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you're talking about like basically screwing up someone's many hours of putting something together. And this sort of bug is what scares the hell out of all of us when it comes to thinking about launch.
It's a data loss
bugs are always at the very top of the priority queue.
Yep. So it's always data loss and crashes. We always try to drop everything and fix those. The problem with this one is it hasn't hit very many people, and it hasn't hit anybody in a reproducible way.
Mm-hmm.
Until yesterday when Talk Gibberish was like, I did it. I did it again, and it keeps happening. And I was like, oh, shit, send me your level. So he sent me a copy of his level. I loaded it up, and sure enough, I could reproduce it. And the long and the short of it is that it was because – sometimes Game Maker would save a number like, for example, 0.4 as 0.4. And sometimes it would save it as 0.4000000006. Mm-hmm. Those are two different numbers.
They're not equal.
They're not equal.
Yep.
And just because of the way that we were compressing the levels, we did kind of need them to be equal. And then that really tiny offset cascaded into a bunch of other weird things. And then all of a sudden people would lose data.
This bug took what? Both you guys?
It took us like three hours to track down.
Because
The other bigger problem is that when you're writing debug output with GameMaker to like turn things into text so you can see what the problem is, GameMaker rounds everything to the nearest hundredth decimal.
Yep. So you could never actually
see. So we could never actually see this problem until.
We just had to infer it.
We had to guess that this was the problem, which Adam guessed, and then multiply the number by like 10 billion so that we could. See it rounded to the decimal and see it actually work. So I'm so relieved that we fixed this. And honestly, if that was the only thing we had gotten done in this 4 weeks.
Oh my God. Yes. It's tremendous.
Yes. But the lesson learned is be very careful with floats.
Yep.
You know, just
you
don't trust them.
Floats are a lie.
You can't trust them.
So that's all that's happening with Levelhead. We'll have a few more things, but yeah, the patch notes will be out. We'll have the big blog post and everything. And then it's going to get a little bit rocky because then Adam's gone for 2 weeks. I'm gone for 2 weeks.
I'm just chilling.
Sam's just chilling. He's just going to carry the –
I'm not gone, but I'm just going to be like
– He's going to be mentally checked out. Mentally
checked out. I'm pretty mentally just done.
You know? So we're going to have kind of a turbulent schedule. We're going to have to figure things out.
This always happens at the end of the year, right? Because you get – just the holidays happen, which is
– family stuff, trips.
It starts with – with October being October for us usually, which is, it's usually just a crazy work time.
Well, I mean, we're trying to jam everything in before November and December hit because that's when everybody's gone all of a sudden, you know, that stuff.
And so then November and December, we take a 2 week break. The whole studio does at the end of December. So just like the 20 somethingth to the end of the year. And so that just half of that month's gone. And then, you know, it's just kind of what it is. So we always end up kind of packing stuff in pretty densely here at the back quarter.
Yeah. It's been tough and it's going to be tougher.
Yeah.
But we'll have some more information. I think on patch day, we'll announce when the next patch will be coming. And then we'll go from there. All right. And then last, before we get on to questions, Sam, you want to talk about art practice?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I was doing it. I'm taking this class. It's been really good. Learning a bunch of stuff. Getting good feedback. Mainly the feedback's like, you're really bad at this, you know, in various forms.
And you're like, but how bad? And that's when the learning happens.
Yeah, exactly. And this teacher's been very good at that. It's weird. He's got a very good feedback style that feels like it has – have you heard of clicker training with dogs?
Yep.
Was it the Hidden Brain episode? There was an episode where someone had been applying this to medical students.
Yeah, it worked great.
Yeah, so you apply a clicker training to basically use
– when they are doing a suture or something, if they do it correctly, you do the click.
Exactly, because what it does is it removes the emotional variable from the giving of the feedback because it's just marking, like you're doing it correctly. There's no need to be
They just call it marking.
Yeah, marking. Yeah. So the weird thing is this guy's feedback style feels closer to marking than basically any other person I think I've gotten it from. where he just is like, yeah, you're doing this wrong. Here's how, here's why. Here's these things you should be doing. Here's, you know, the outcome of what you could see if you change all this stuff. That's it. Every single time. No emotional load, literally whatsoever. Or I'm just older and don't give a fuck anymore. One of the two. Or maybe a mixture. Probably a combo. Who knows? And so it's been really good. And I was super fired about it for the first few weeks, which made me work for, you know, somewhere between 11 and like 13 extra hours for those first couple weeks. And then about halfway through the last one, I was just like, I am real tired of it. You know, I was having a good time. I felt like I was learning a lot. I was just getting cooked. And so I overdid it, you know? I just overdid it. And especially with everything we had going on at work, it's just like, it was just a lot. And so then after overdoing it, I had to underdo it.
Gotta, you know, make it balance.
You gotta swing that pendulum all the way.
All the way back.
Back to
which luckily is where sort of the outer worlds has come in.
I started to think about it for a second to be like,
me too. Was it great? as far as being this fun thing to just kind of go do and not worry about so much. And so I'll be swinging back into it. I think this weekend will be my re-entry. But I literally just had to take like basically a 9-day break after just doing it too much. And it's something I've talked to, you know, that coach I had previously, and even the therapist and stuff. She's just like, yeah, you just seem like you have a tendency to kind of like overzealously engage with something to a degree that is not sustainable. And I was like, astute. I know this about myself now. But
So then you aggressively stopped doing that.
Yeah. So you overzealously
underdid
it.
Well, I had to kind of reset, right? And then I'm hoping to kind of get a bit of a better balance here. Mm-hmm. A bit of a better balance, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the core pillars of my personality as well, is
overdoing
pretty much anything.
What are you overdoing right now?
Well, nothing. That's actually what where I've landed is to try to land in sort of like a very gray, meaningless existence
where you're just doing it,
where I'm doing as little as possible to make sure that I don't accidentally fall down a black hole
and overdo it,
you know? So I gotta just like keep it even, just do what I gotta do. And then try not to get in there too hard. So it's been working pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay. So then
that's all. Yeah.
So you're, and this is swinging back now?
Yeah, we're swinging back over the weekend, I think, starting on Saturday. Probably put another like 6 hours in. I will.
Jeez, I'm going to go 12 this time.
I've learned nothing.
I'll try. Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
But, I mean, isn't that better? Isn't it better to go really hard for a little while and then just take a – it's probably fine.
Yeah. It's all fine. I think it's just you don't want to hit that point where you overdo it to such an extent that you're done. You know what I mean? Which is basically being burned out.
Yeah.
Because you can, like, you literally just do that. If you can just do it so much that you are done doing it now forever, right?
I think, well, there's also a risk too. If you haven't done a thing at all and you go right into overdoing it when you start, that's the best way to guarantee that you will stop forever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you got to go really hard at the beginning so that you can sear the outside to keep the juices trapped in there, right? Because like, if you want to make a good burger, you know, you don't cook it at 90 degrees for 6 weeks. You know, you got to burn the shit out of it.
Bet if you cooked it at 90 degrees for 6 weeks, it'd be fucking delicious.
But then you have to wait 6 weeks when you slow cook a burger.
I bet it'd be dry as fuck.
Now, when you slow cook those things,
unless you sear the outside first,
yeah. That's true. Yeah.
So you're saying
the point is, if you want to learn a new skill, you got to follow burger cooking method, which is you got to sear the outside
or wrap the outside with foil.
Right. You got to have some kind of a plan to basically, you got to keep the juices from getting out.
That's exactly right. So you can either keep the juices in by searing the outsides, right?
Yeah. By burning it,
which is by working out, you know, super. But there's a flip involved, right? Because you have to flip the burger at one point to start searing. You don't sear both sides at once unless you're
meaty. Yeah, but you got to do it pretty close proximity.
This is where you basically go as hard as possible for 3 weeks. Then you take a week off. That's your flip. Then you. This is the burger method of learning new skills. There we go.
This is what I'm doing. Yeah.
You sear one side. Now you got to remember, like, you've only cooked half the burger, so you're not done.
You're not done yet.
Then you flip it, you give it a week to cool down, and then you sear the other side. Now the juices are trapped in there.
That's mm-hmm. That's not usually how flipping works for a burger.
Well, this is
somehow it gets cooler.
You gotta imagine this is like a time dilation situation.
You're saying the flip, you're talking about in the air right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like the 3 minutes of searing. Flip. Yeah, the 3 minutes of searing is like 3 weeks.
Right.
And then you slowly take a whole walk in the air. You really whip
It's an epic.
You whip that flip burger up there.
Yeah.
So then, it lands on the other side. See the other side. Boom. Now you can cook it on low, okay? Because
you've got it. You've got the juices stuck in there.
And now you can just do a little bit mm-hmm. here and there, but you're good now.
So maybe the problem was trapped. I didn't have.
You didn't plan for the second.
I didn't plan for the second.
You didn't plan for the flip.
Yep. Well, you just didn't do the flip.
Because you can't just cook.
Well, that's actually, I just finished the flip.
Oh, that's true, right.
But since I didn't plan for it, it took a little bit longer.
See the other side.
Yeah, I'll see the other side.
Yep.
This is next couple weeks.
I genuinely like this concept. If you want to learn a new skill, you got to sear one side, flip it, sear the other side, mm-hmm. and then cook and then it on low.
Yep.
Just perpetually. Okay.
It just keeps getting tastier.
It does.
If you
cook it for a little bit low.
Well, I mean, the juices are in there now, so you're good.
Yep.
You can cook it as much as you want now.
Yeah,
just keep getting better.
Pretty sure that's how science works.
All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.bscotch.net. The highest upvoted question comes from Oxdodecado, which I think is hex code. We've had this person before.
Mm-hmm. We have, yeah.
At around episode 228 of the podcast, starting from episode 1, you will have podcasted for 240 hours, 10 continuous days, or 6 40-hour weeks. Do you think that spending approximately 18 person weeks on podcasting has been worth it? How does one measure the effects of a podcast?
I think we should just quit.
It's better than tweeting. We can all agree.
But isn't everything?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a very low bar.
It's a super low bar. Mm-hmm.
18 person weeks.
What was life like before we did the podcast? It's a nice measuring stick.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever you want to call it, it's like a mile marker as you're driving down the road. You know,
but it only is if you have a map as a reference point, or if you revisit
off the chain.
It's just that you're going every now and then. There's a check-in point, so you can kind of like reset, reflect, think of what's been going on.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you do at mile markers as you're driving?
Yeah. You're like, that was a good mile.
Just every time.
I wonder what this next one's going to be.
That's true. How come mile markers, like a milestone is one of those like big key, metaphors for project planning.
Yeah.
But everyone just flies past milestones at 60 miles an hour, doesn't even notice they exist.
Yeah. Is a milestone the same thing as a mile?
I think you're thinking of deadlines. People fly past deadlines without thinking about
them existing. Why is it called a deadline?
A milestone is a deadline.
A deadline is just the last milestone, and it's the one you're definitely going to miss.
Mm. Yeah. I think a deadline is the date associated with a milestone.
What was right?
the milestone is the thing you're going to do.
What was the quote about deadlines? It's like, I love the sound they make as they go whooshing past.
And the nice Doppler effect.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. They make a Wii U.
Yep. Yeah, but I guess the question. So, what
was it worth it? I mean, is it worth it? We're about ready for season two, though.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's a good reboot for season two.
Episode 247. That's season two, episode one. We have very long seasons,
which we're definitely not doing because I don't want to reprogram our podcast tooling because it assumes everything's an increment.
Oh no, the episode numbers will be the same. It's just season two is starting.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. It's arbitrary.
Yeah.
Like everything. No, I think I don't know. I mean. 18 person weeks. It's so funny because there's some things that when you tally them, you're like, that can't be a good idea.
But it's been over 5 years. So like
that's 7 years, right?
Well, or I guess the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's 18 person weeks spread over? It's about, about 1 hour per week, turns out.
Yep. So, Somehow the math works out that way.
So
it's 1/40th of our, probably 1/5. It's probably 2% of our working hours are the podcast.
So here's what I think about it. I think making games is very hard. I think it's a strangely isolating affair as well, because oftentimes we can't even talk about what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
To friends or whatever, even and not even necessarily fans. And so I think the really nice thing that the podcast has done for us is. We talked about this, I think, somewhere post-Crashlands, was that it forces us to sit down for an hour every day or every week and just sort of like be goofballs.
Yeah, we actually spend like a good 20 minutes before and after the podcast kind of just being like, what the hell happened this week?
Yeah. And so
we have to know what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and so it is both this really good touchstone, but I think more importantly, it's sort of like if you ever had that experience where you're just like not in the mood to hang out with people or talk to people, but you have to, like, for whatever reason, you have to go out and do this thing. And then you go out and do it, and then afterwards you're just in a better mood now.
You're like, that was fine.
Because you had to fake it for a moment, right? And I think there's something –
it's that whole like you made yourself happy by smiling.
Yeah.
Situation.
And so I think something about the podcast to me is actually it's a good buoyancy device for the studio, because I think we just get in here, boo goofballs, people ask us questions, we can talk about stuff, and it's just fun, as opposed to the other 5 days of the week, which
it's garbage.
Yeah, I think that's what it's for. I guess why we keep doing it.
I think
because I'm getting something out of it.
Me too.
Yeah, I think we just enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about the cost, time isn't the only cost. It's also task switching, because if we spent the same amount of time that we do the podcast doing Twitter,
yes,
it would basically fuck up our whole week.
Yeah.
Because we'd be doing it in 5 minute increments, basically all like throughout each day, mm-hmm. every day. And it would cause constant derailment of all the work that we're doing.
Did we mention something in the past how we stumbled across some other indie developer? Discovered they had so many tweets, and we did the math on it where it was like, if they only spent 5 minutes on Twitter per tweet that they've made, mm-hmm. then it was like 42 weeks.
Yeah.
Of full-time 40 hours a week,
mm-hmm.
being on Twitter.
Yep.
And 5 minutes per tweet that you send in terms of like time spent on Twitter is probably a low estimate.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a full-time job and a half.
But I think that's the point. It's like any one of these small behaviors that you stack up over the course of like 5 years, they're always going to look in retrospect, like monumentally huge. And they are in some ways, right? And I think it's one of those important notes, which is to say, like, what have you been doing for the last 5 years for an hour every week?
Yep.
Because, we could have been. Because
you've put 18 person weeks into that.
Yeah.
But also importantly, it takes 10,000 hours to be an expert at something, and we're literally only 240 in. So we are like 0.2% of the way.
We're still podcasting. What,
2%? We got a long way to go. Yeah. Anyway, is the point. How long will it take us?
It depends. Do we get to have a collective expertise? Like if our whole group reaches 10,000 hours, is that, what I mean? Because that's where you go.
Okay, people always do this shit where they go like, oh, our team has a collective 329 years of experience.
Yeah.
It's like, but your team is 900 people. So you've all been working for 6 months? Mm-hmm. Is that?
Yeah.
What is that metric? That doesn't mean anything.
Well, it's one of those ones where you pick the biggest number you have available to you. That's sort of always how this goes. And I think you just get creative. It's like accounting, right? You get creative with
– I want to know how many pounds of people you got. I want to know how much gray matter there is in pounds dedicated to solving my problems.
Yeah. that's a very spooky and fantastic.
We've got 3,296 pounds of brains in our company.
Actually, that means if you're something like Amazon or Google.
Ooh, yeah.
Who have like – because I think Amazon has hundreds of thousands of employees, doesn't
it? Yeah, they got a lot of brains.
How much brain weight are they throwing around?
Brains are like 3 pounds, right? 8 pounds? 8 pounds. Heads are 8 pounds?
Heads are like 8 pounds. Brains are like – they're like 3 pounds. They're tiny. Can we look it up?
Yeah, look it up.
I'm going to
look it up. Also, they're also
how much does
fat.
Does a detached human head weigh? This is a very Halloween
asking for
question.
A friend.
I need to ship it across country.
Because brains are mostly fat, so they can't be that – although fat is heavy.
Speak for yourself. 3 pounds. It's 3 pounds.
3 pounds, yeah. So the rest of your head – so your entire head weighs 8 pounds, and then your brain in there.
Yeah. It's like a little walnut
in there.
It's just
like a little tiny
– yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway. It's not very heavy, but I guess the point is it's 3 pounds per person. And it's pretty stable across actually the entire population. So
to answer your question,
yeah.
the question asker, 3 pounds. That's how much that's the how human much brain weighs. Pretty sure that's what the question was.
We have a collective 9 pounds of brain power going into the podcast. The question is that worth it?
Yeah.
I think so.
Seems fun.
But it's 9 pounds for 2% of the work week. So it's 9 times 0.02. That's right. How many pounds of brain goes into
ooh,
it.
Yeah.
All right, next question comes from
pounds per hour.
Next question.
Pounds per hour. Comes,
no, but that would be pounds per hour per like, available hour.
It's
which
like
is a pretty weird metric.
Well, it's like horsepower.
No,
right?
I want to know the watts. How many watts?
What's a watt? What are the units of that? It's like power over time or something.
But measuring the wattage of a brain is the least important metric you could possibly choose.
I can. Well, that's how you measure your air conditioner. I think it matters. I think it matters a lot because your air conditioner is like, you know, how many kilowatt hours are going.
Yeah, but if I assign my air conditioner to a podcast, it's not going to go very well, right? The air conditioner can't do anything besides.
Yeah, that's because it's going to overcorrect. Air conditioners use a lot of power. Okay,
they do for how much.
That's because they're so stupid.
Yeah,
brains. Brains are very efficient, and they know exactly the right amount of wattage to put into podcasting. Okay. All right. Anyway, let's get on to the next question. Next question comes from Mopate Flatunk. Outside of video games and the occasional movie or television show, you guys don't really discuss any of your other pop culture influences. Are or were any of you into comic books, collectible card games, anime, cosplay? Are you bronies? What what horrible influences went into the butterscotch mix? So this is a bit of a weird one.
Let's touch on the just current pop culture question first.
Okay. What do I know about current pop culture?
That's exactly.
Every time I hear a song, I'm like,
I know about Marvel movies.
Do you know about TikTok?
I've heard of TikTok.
I don't.
Okay. I explored it the other day because I was like, I'm clearly out of touch.
Yeah.
I need to touch this.
I did this with
touched it and I was like, I'm gonna put this back in.
I remember doing that with Snapchat. Like a year ago or something. It had been out for a few years. Like everybody was using it all the time. Yeah, and then my brother-in-law was like using it all the time. And I was like, why? What is this? And so then I downloaded it and tried it. And then I just couldn't. I was like, why? Why would I want this in my life? So I think that's how I feel about TikTok also.
Yeah. As far as the rest of general pop culture references.
We don't play Fortnite.
Well, what's the threshold for something to be pop culture?
People know about it.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I'm into Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I mean, I was into it.
Yeah.
Kind of shit
till the end of season 8. Jeez. Yep.
Or even the middle.
Maybe the middle.
I have watched a significant amount of My Little Pony.
You did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I enjoyed it.
Are you a brownie?
You're a brownie.
Not.
Adam's a brownie?
I could be. It depends on how you define. I'm not sure how it's defined, but I worry that that word goes into a dark place. You know
what I mean? It probably does.
Most words do.
Yeah. I think probably it would be if it was somehow part of your identity that you watched.
Yeah,
which is not. No. So yeah, you're just a man who watched.
So I'm really into The Expanse.
The Expanse is good.
But I don't think that's pop culture because it's not very popular.
Yep. So that means, yeah.
There's that.
I watched The Great British Baking Show a lot.
Still not part of it.
Watch The Bachelor.
There you go.
That's I'm gross. Into that one. It's terrible.
That's
I love it.
That's garbage.
Do you find that to be an inspiration for your work?
No, not in any way, shape, or form. But it's probably in there.
So as far as stuff from our youth, we
played Pokemon.
We played Pokemon. We were allowed to play Game Boys in the car on long road trips.
Played the shit out of Kirby, Wario.
Wario, Kirby. But we didn't have game consoles in the house until much later in life. So we weren't – people oftentimes like will see some of our games and be like, oh, I see you took inspiration from bleh, like some game – that I have never heard of.
Toad Jam and Earl.
Toad Jam and Earl.
We made Quadrivers Rampage. Everyone's like, wow, it's like Toad Jam and Earl. You guys did a great job. And we're like, what is that?
Even when I looked up Toad Jam and Earl, I still don't.
I couldn't figure it out.
I don't see the parallel. I think just maybe it's an isometric view.
It's isometric and you can follow it.
Colorful.
There you go.
Yeah. So there you go. I guess there's some things.
Did Pokemon cards? Did you guys do? Any cards?
No. I never did cards. I always had a fascination with figuring out how to get into some kind of cards.
I got into Magic the Gathering 3 times. I never stayed there. I got in.
Just dipped in and dipped out. It's expensive to stay in there.
Yeah. But I got really excited because I would meet some friends and like, oh my God, we're going to play some Magic the Gathering. And then I'd go and they'd be so intense about it and they'd have like a Ziploc bag full of cards and they'd be like, and then I'd be like, show me how to do it. So it'd be this fun little thing for like a couple of days where they'd show me how to do it, learn about it, and then I'd go buy a deck for like $20 and then forget about it.
And then
a couple
of days.
Turns out I felt about League of Legends.
Yeah.
You helped me figure out how to kind of play it. Taught me some strategies and like show me where the websites I could go to learn about. I was using like, what's his name? Like Vicarus or something. Some V name. Yep. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like learning how to use that. I was like learning everything about this character and then I played it for like 3 days and then I haven't played it since.
You and then you were like, what am I doing? I got programming.
So the question was, did you overdo it?
You didn't know.
No,
I
honestly didn't care the whole time. I was trying to care. You know, I was
I think it's what it is.
This seems like something that people are into. It'd be cool to get into.
So what controls that? You know what I mean? Because I think that's the same way I feel about a lot of these things now. which I think makes you feel old.
Yeah, like old age.
Yeah, you have to try to care now because I'm like, I have these other things that I'm very concerned about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Work stuff. I've been kind of wondering that because it's pretty – I think it's more and more rare nowadays that like I read a book that I'm just like, oh, shit, this is incredible. And then I get really sucked into the story or that I play a game and I'm like, oh, my God. And I think part of it is kind of like a lack of novelty. Because like the more stuff you've done, the more stories you've read, the more games you've played, whatever, the more you start to kind of pick up on the patterns. And the like teens love everything because everything is new and it's the most exciting shit ever. It's like, why would people be using TikTok instead of whatever the hell it is replacing? Well, it's a new thing. And
that's, it's probably replacing Vine, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
But Vine has been dead for years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess they just needed a new one.
They needed a new one. They got a new one. It's exciting and it's new. And all us old people, meaning anybody who's not a teen, are like, I don't know. I already saw that happen. Right?
Well, I didn't use it the first time it came out either when it was Vine.
Yeah, but that's because you were already in your mid-20s by
then. Yeah.
And that means you're not a teen anymore, which means you can no longer be excited about
anything,
really.
Because you can – I mean, you very much can cultivate, you know, more like a more excitable approach to these things.
Yeah.
I think it's something you actually have to cultivate as you get older.
You don't get to just have it.
Yeah, because it always goes the other way.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a nice slide there. So,
well, I think part of it is it's probably the case that you tend to overestimate how familiar something is. Like if you're playing The Outer Worlds and it's like, oh, this is like Fallout 3. You could very easily take that in the direction of like, yeah, but like I already played Fallout 3, so who gives a shit?
Right.
And the fact is like that it pretty much is Fallout 3 in space.
Yeah.
There's even
but
like
it's in space now.
There's even like for some reason all of the music in the game it sounds like 1950s radio jingles. Like it's very much Fallout 3 in space. But it's also hilarious. And it's got all kinds of other things.
It's got new
stories
and the whole thing.
Yeah. And so you kind of have to just get over it, you know, I guess. Like get over the fact that it's familiar and just kind of like be okay with that. But I still don't think you can – for something like League of Legends where like this is a hobby that you would have to devote thousands of hours.
You got to be
It's a bigger ask to like – to just
really get in there. And you can't just make yourself care about that.
No.
But you know. I think you can find the good stuff and something that's like you dip into like Outer Worlds and like you play that for 20 hours and then you're done with it or whatever.
I would say as far as
play the shit out of this game.
Yeah, I think as far as other cultural references go, so not necessarily pop culture, but just sort of things that have been stewing in the brew of butterscotch. Olin Rogers.
Oh yeah,
is honestly probably one of the most impactful ones.
Just, and Dave Barry.
And Dave Barry.
Not that way. That's also like a rock person, right?
Dave Barry,
Chuck Barry, the columnist.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave Barry, from Florida, the Florida Times or something.
From when we were he wrote humor columns in the 90s. And probably he might still be. I don't know.
He might be. They probably don't hold up.
He might even be dead.
Yeah.
And it's
we haven't kept up.
It's
on our
possible that in retrospect, there's probably a lot of questionable and problematic things in those columns.
Very likely.
Who knows?
But at the time when we were teens and.
But it was all absurdism and pun-based humor, basically.
Yeah, I should pick one of those up. I feel like
– pick up some Dave.
Pick up some Dave. And then we listened to a lot of Weird Al Yankovic.
Weird Al.
A lot of Haywood Banks.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be – nobody's going to know about that. No.
But we listened to that on Bob and Tom in the Morning.
Yeah.
Which was deeply problematic.
Which was deeply problematic.
As a radio show.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff from the 90s and 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
And now.
But I think people are becoming more aware of how problematic some of their views are.
Yeah.
But man.
They do hate the awareness of it, though.
It's just so uncomfortable.
You know? So good to realize you're doing bad things.
To realize you're doing bad things to people.
So I think there's Haywood. There was listened to a lot of Alanis Morissette while we were building K-Nex.
Connects
is one of them, and Legos.
Connects or K-Nex?
I think it's Connects because it's supposed to sound like the word connect. Like,
like it connects.
Connect. K-Nex. This is a GIF situation.
Shit.
Yes, we had all of those. And then I think
the, listen to the song Albuquerque by Weird Al to give it, get a like a the most distilled sense of what our childhoods
100% were. And about. Then I remember reading just a shitload of Goosebumps books. I remember the one called The Beast from the East, which had like a super cool cover on it because it was all purple and
we had blue. Like 20 of those.
I we had like 20 of them.
We had Night of the Living Dummy. I cracked all those
spots. Oh, Night of the Living Dummy creeped me the fuck out.
I remember buying at the Scholastic Book Fair, which I don't know if they even have those anymore, but I hope they do because they're amazing.
Do people even have books anymore?
Do you guys even have books? You children?
They've got a Scholastic iPad Fair.
Oh, God.
You swipe your iPad. You go and
I bought you could get the Night of the Living Dummy medallion. And it was one of those ones, there's a hologram, so as you turn it, then he's 3D in there, and it's so creepy.
I remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah, you carried that thing around and creeped yourself out with it all
the time. I was like, Every day. Yeah, no, I think there's a bunch of that stuff in there. And then cartoons, Animaniacs, the Bee's Knees was Animaniacs, and then we watched a bunch of Tom and Jerry. Do you remember going to Grandma's house and we'd watch
Three Stooges? Three Stooges too, yeah.
Watch a shitload of Three Stooges at Grandma's house. And that
I just remember
perfect.
The scene of these guys always doinking each other in the eye, in the eyeballs for some reason.
Yes.
And thinking that that was fine. Like that's not a horribly bad thing
I've
to do.
Never poke someone in the eye. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're poking each other in the eye a lot. Yeah. Constantly. Like it's a signature move. But that's a bad move to do to a person.
Yeah, people worry about video games causing people to be violent, but Three Stooges.
Actually, I don't remember much of watching the I didn't remember a lot of Disney movies, but I do remember a lot of the Warner Brothers cartoons. I don't know what that's about exactly. Because I know I'm sure we watched the Disney movies.
Yeah.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, I think it's honestly because the old Disney movies are – people are going to hate this, but but they're pretty fucking medium.
Mm. Which ones?
The ones that we grew up with, I feel like.
I didn't even remember.
Like
Bambi. Remember Bambi? I was shocked.
Bambi was fucked up. That was actually probably one of the better ones.
Yeah, really. It was really good.
but Little Mermaid. Like that's the only one that I kind of like. For some reason, that one kind of sticks in my memory because we
like the quintessential Disney movie.
I never got into it.
Yeah,
you weren't a mermaid head.
A mermaid.
A mermoonie.
It was just it's a brony. That's a bromade. Isn't bromade like a soap or something?
Bromide is a chemical. Or an element, I guess.
Bromide.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you have a specific gripe about The Little Mermaid or do you not want to go into it too deeply?
I'm not going to go into it really because, you know,
you're going to get us flamed.
Disney things
by
are
all
a beloved franchise.
Mer people.
So on, so
well,
on.
Again.
I find them to be. I'm trying to choose a good one. I'm going to go with empty. So like I find them to be.
What about deeply problematic? I like that one.
There's a lot, but that's actually it's just
especially because that one's under the ocean, so it's more deeply
problematic. But to me, that's because there are two issues. One is that, and of course, they're all very deeply problematic.
Yeah.
But the other one is also that they feel soulless.
I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with you on that. I just didn't like
that's what I'm saying. People are not going to agree with me on this.
Even I don't agree with you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Mermaids.
We don't need to get
I'm just trying to show
it.
There's
fine.
A range of opinions on this podcast, so we don't get, you know, hate mailed.
Yeah.
Hate mailed.
hate tweeted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the modern thing now.
Yeah.
Nobody sends mail anymore.
Unfortunately, I don't check my Twitter, but.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Let's get on to the next question.
I'll see you in a few weeks.
From Bicky Bopple Boop, which this is a good one. How do you feel about these quotes from episode 134? Spaghetti Nightmare.
Was it half ago?
It was 100 episodes ago, right?
It was 1 year and 9 months ago, according at the time that this question was asked.
Basically.
Here are the quotes, discussing level head. We could just publish the damn thing. A platform maker, which will be done soon.
Mm.
And a few UIs in there and we're good. Accurate?
I mean, no. Certainly not accurate.
Well.
It depends on goals.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
At the time, at the very beginning, we truly thought we were going to just spit out basically a just functional platformer maker. That was the original plan. And so at that time, those were correct quotes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we took it to GDC and we were like, shit, we got to do more with this because people actually want it.
Yep. And then we got more serious about doing our jobs well.
Yeah, that happened.
That happened later. But that also made it so we're like, we should make this real good.
Yep. And then the industry has been changing underneath us the whole time.
Which has made us also be like, interesting.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Which has made us be like, oh, we better double down on this bet.
So yep. Keep investing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's going to pay
out just fine. Yeah, but I mean, this kind of relates back to that first question about the value of doing the podcast. Is it's kind of cool to go back and be like, if only we had known.
Oh, those poor, stupid souls.
Yeah. Some not day, because it's impossible, you know, time-wise. But sometime, I want to go back and listen and just like start at the beginning and just listen back just through.
Wash over it.
Yeah.
If you do once a week, you can basically just have like, you can just be 5 years, you can just see the past 5 years as if it's happening in parallel, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So that'd be kind of
Basically, every podcast day, I'll just listen to an episode from five years ago.
Yeah.
And I'll just be on a trailing sadness train. Where were we 5 years ago?
I think it's just, I mean, it's remarkable that we're even still around, frankly.
Yeah.
To be amused by these things.
I'm pretty pumped about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to keep it around.
I hope 5 years from now we can look back at how stupid
we were. That's always the hope.
Because we'll still be doing the podcast. That's the hope. Mm-hmm. All right. Next question comes from Jim Zombie Brainsock, which is a spooky name.
Very spooky.
What is the advantage to building Rumpus from scratch rather than using an existing open source backend like Nakama? Do you ever regret making your own thing? Would you do it differently if you had to start over?
This is actually not that hard to answer because it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. So if you're basically saying, hey, I got a game, I want some online components, but the focus is the game. I don't have the resources to do anything, but even if you do have the resources, still the off the shelf products for web tooling these days are really, really good. The interfaces to then use them with things like there's like Netlify and I don't know, there's a jillion website names that all kind of sound the same.
Yeah.
But that kind of they solve every hosting problem for you. They solve auth for you. They solve all kinds of stuff for you. And you can kind of zombie them together and create some infrastructure that where you didn't have to really solve any of the hard problems.
That sounds nice. So
this is great. It's amazing. And that's probably that should be the starting point in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So in our case, we wanted to be able to build long-term infrastructure that we run our company on top of as well as our games for things that would be cross game and for things that we could control, because a lot of our goal for our tech stack has been to distance ourselves from dependencies that are really hard to extricate yourself from. Yeah. Right. So our number one thing that we're kind of invested in right now is GameMaker. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're so invested in a single platform means that we are at the whim of that platform. Right. So if they decide to change things, we're just fucked. They just had to drop support for Xbox, say, in the future, right? Mm-hmm. We just don't get to publish on Xbox now. And so for the web tech, I kind of think of that as the same way because of the fact that we are using it as company architecture.
Yeah. Which means we get to decide.
We get to decide
screw ourselves over.
Yeah. Well, we get to decide everything. So if you look at the off-the-shelf tools, they have all kinds of stuff that solve a lot of the problems that we need to solve just right out of the box. However, the moment that we want to do something that is not in that toolkit – there's nothing we can do. We don't have access to that system. And so now we have to basically build an additional system or go find an additional tool and then find some way to make these things like talk to each other in some weird way. And now all of a sudden what might've been for you spaghetti code that you would have written to make your own thing is now spaghetti services, right?
Yeah.
That are all like doing weird shit, talking to each other,
spaghetti services.
Yeah, right. Which is honestly sounds already delicious. A little bit of a problem with our current structure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still using multiple services to make all this stuff work. And so keeping track of like where all the data is and who's talking to what and all that kind of stuff is already a little bit problematic with a tech stack that we're sort of fully in control of. So from what we're doing, I don't have any regrets about the path that we've taken because it's allowing us to do really cool stuff. And it allows us to have a platform that we can keep on investing into so that if we want to now have, let's say we want to do a real-time multiplayer game in the future. Which we probably won't do because it would be a terrible idea for a lot of reasons. But let's say we did
want
to.
We're
going to
do it.
Let's say we did want to.
Make an MMO. Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's say we made an MMO or whatever. That could be built on top of the current stack and just adding new tech and adding new features to it so that now we could all of a sudden have like Levelhead could interact with this MMO in some way or whatever. We take the same users with us. We can build our tooling that runs the studio and runs our support system, runs all that kind of stuff around whatever infrastructure is running this other game. And so on and so forth. So I think the value of having your own tech stack is enormous if you can afford it.
Yeah.
And it's mostly a long-term value. In the short term, I think you're basically always better off doing whatever the fastest thing is, like grabbing off the shelf products, stitching them together, making those work, especially because those are getting so good these days. The other thing to consider, though, is that all those services are very expensive.
Yes.
They don't seem like it because when you're using it for personal use, if you're using it to run a small business, that's all fine. The cost to you, then as you're talking like $20 a month or maybe even like free for a lot of these things if you're using it at a low enough level. But once you, the question is, how do these things scale? And scaling for almost any of these really, really good, high quality, easy to use services is really fucking expensive, like crazy expensive. Because I mean, there's just really cool tools out there, like things like websites that you can use to host your images that will dynamically resize them for you. And like they're requested from your website, and they have even have like a JavaScript thing that you can just like plug right in so that you can just, you behave the way you normally would running a website, and you just put your images over there instead, and then it just handles everything for you, right? But then it turns out if you like look at how much that's going to cost you, like in the long term, and if you have 1,000 visitors a day, you're talking like now maybe $100 a month already, right? Mm-hmm. And now if you've got 10,000 users a day, you're literally taking that times 10. That is right. Literally what's happening.
Yes, right? So it basically becomes the question, which is like, what happens when you have the success that you want, actually,
right? And what we try to do is plan both for the infrastructure that we wanted long term and for the success that we wanted long term.
It's dressing for the job that you want.
Exactly.
You know?
But it is true that you can't always do that. And like, it is a good problem to have your tech not successfully scale with the scale of your success, right? It's a bad problem to have also, right? It's both those things at once. Because hopefully if that has happened to you, then you now have the support that you need, whether the financial or staff or whatever, to now fix that problem, right? As a consequence that it's coming along with scale. But it can be very bad if your stuff doesn't scale well, because like the cost for web services, as like, when you're using web services at a low level, you can use services that you're paying flat rates, you know, whatever it is. The moment you go into that space where you have to be able to scale to outrageous numbers, you just have to pay for whatever you use. There's no flat rates anymore. So, so if we just suddenly had to service, 100,000 players a month versus what we're currently serving right now, our cost would just go up 50x or 100x or whatever. They would just scales linearly, right? And by controlling our own tech stack, we get to control completely where all those costs are coming from. We can control the design of everything, so we know like how much bandwidth we're sending, how we're going to cache everything, all that kind of stuff. So I think for the long term, this was definitely the right move. The short term, though, if you don't need it.
It was a decision by our studio to say that that our unique tech capabilities are one of our core value adds.
Basically. Right. Yeah.
So we did it ourselves. So
we did it ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. We got time for one more question. The Emerald DL says, do any of you particularly like mathematics? If so, what is your favorite area that is not directly related to web development or programming?
So I love statistics. Which I guess kind of the long and short of it, but statistics is fun because it gets a really bad rap because people are taught it poorly and boringly, and people use it poorly out in the real world
and boringly
but most importantly misleadingly, because the thing with statistics is in the end it's just like it's some claims you're making about the world based on some things that you've measured, right? That's what it is.
Like our team has 300 combined years of industry
experience. that would be a statistic.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. And then you could do statistics. I don't know, there's correct ways to say these things, who cares.
Our team has an average of 300 years of experience. Right.
Yeah. But being able to convert numbers into things that you can say about into things you can say about truth in the world, right? Along with the idea of like what that means with the degree of certainty and that sort of thing, right? Is basically a magical power. It's like programming.
It's very fascinating.
It's very cool to be able to say if you can – it goes down all the way down to the level of basically knowing what questions you can even ask, and then how do you collect the information that lets you get at that question, and then how do you evaluate the data that you have now measured, you know, to try to get that question. And then now that you've done all of that, how do you convert this into things that you can reason about? So you can basically say like, this is big or this is small or this is good or bad or whatever. And then how do you know that you can trust that, right? And in what context is this actually a valid way of seeing the world? And it's so nuanced and so complicated and interesting, but it's not hard the way people think that it's hard. They think it's hard in the wrong way, where they're just like, you have to memorize all this stuff
They
think the math is hard, but it's actually the reasoning.
Most people know the math. They can learn the math, and then they just use it wrong.
You don't even have to know the math, honestly, because you can use statistical packages to do any math that you want.
In fact, everybody who does a lot of statistics does that.
Oh yeah, nobody does doing the math. Nobody does. But people who are doing like real statisticians will know the math behind it, at least at some point.
Right.
Right. They probably don't anymore. So like, if you were to take any of the things I learned back in my ex scientist career, there's a whole bunch of shit that I knew at that time that I just don't know anymore. But that doesn't mean I can't still reason about and make use of the sort of the consequences of knowing those specific facts. It's the using it as a tool to reason about the world. It's that part that is the interesting part. Hmm. And every time people are learning about it, they're always focusing on here's a formula for this, here's when you can use it, blah blah blah. Now let's do this on some money numbers, like as if the only place to fucking use statistics is
money numbers
is business, yep, right? Yep. And even in business, it's actually we start asking questions about how users behave. Like all of a sudden now it's a psychology problem, right? And when you're talking about science, and then you're trying to ask some question about how the world works. And so the depth of understanding you have to have about the problem to even be able to obtain data and then reason about it, it's like the numbers are insufficient. To me, that's the beautiful thing about statistics is people want to be able to convert the world into a set of numbers and then be like, now we know how the world works. And that is literally never, it never has been and never will be how it works. It's actually a human brain applying reasoning to their understanding of the world.
To a model
of the world and like trying to convert that model into measurements, then convert those into something that you can then use to hold on to in your brain so you can reason about something.
So you can make decisions
do
something about it.
And so, yeah, I think it's very cool and it's very powerful. And it's the fact that there is no truth there. It's just like, it's you doing your best. It's a tool. Then you're doing your best to use it as a tool to reason about the world and try to establish a better sense of how the world works, which is not the same as the truth, right? But just to try to get a better sense. I think it's empowering. It also it tells you about the reality of the world that we live in, which is that there are no facts, right? There's just
truthiness.
There's just truthiness. There's just like the world as best as we can tell what the world is. And so I think statistics is probably the most viable reasoning tool that humans have invented. Hmm. I would stand behind that. But
you got to be able to use it properly.
You got to be able to use it properly
to reason with it.
It's actually very challenging, but it's challenging in the way that puzzles are challenging. It's actually just really interesting.
So I tell you about I had a really fun chat with someone at an industry conference. They said their team used market research to drive the entirety of the development process. I think I told you guys about this. The entirety of the development process for a game, from the art style to the type of game they're making.
It was like A-B testing.
A-B testing constantly. Everything.
Yeah.
And always picked the thing at one.
Because logic would dictate if you show people two things and you always pick the better one, and you just do that 1,000 times for everything in your game.
A winner of a product.
Yep.
And the reason that this doesn't work, of course, is because – because
you have to know what you're measuring.
You have to know what you're measuring. And then, of course, you can't necessarily have an entire audience decide what it is that they want. Unfortunately.
No, also each of those pieces don't operate in a vacuum.
Yep. Context is completely important.
Context is essential.
And so comically, and of course, or maybe not comically, how do you think the game did?
I already know. It did poorly.
No bueno.
No bueno at all. And everyone's like, this is a piece of garbage.
Well, because context is essential, but also you have to know what you're measuring. So if you're doing an A-B test, it seems obvious. Like it seems super tubular. You're just like, okay, if I do an A-B test, I just say, here's my two variants. Let me go try these out and then whichever one is better. But the question is, what does it mean to try it? That's question number one. So you have to send it to people, presumably. How are you sending it to people? Mm-hmm. How do those people represent the people who will actually mm-hmm. get it, right? Because now you're doing a sampling, right? So you have to understand about how sampling works, how to reason about finding a pool of people that match this. And you have to ask things like, okay, what could possibly impact this because this is not happening at the same time? Or maybe it is. So I'm like doing A-B tests like on a live ops kind of a thing.
Facebook or Google or
something. And actually you're going to have to in order to remove a whole bunch of variables that, that might come into play. But it's this kind of thing. Like now you have to start like drilling down and asking all these questions about what happens if I do this and what – because the question that you say you're asking is not the question that you're actually asking ever, right? Mm. It's – you say I'm doing an A-B test to find out which one is better, right? That is the high-level, abstract, completely wrong question, right? The question you're actually asking is some elaborate, long-as-fuck – question, right?
That the takes into account when the I context expose of. Two different people to these two different versions of this thing under these very specific circumstances. Right.
And then do this math on those results.
Right. Which one gives me a higher number based on the specific thing that I measured
and then based on how I've decided to interpret that number as being actually larger or smaller, Do I believe that there is a difference and that it is in a favorable direction?
Right.
That means that this is actually more or less or whatever. And then, so that's the actual, that's what you're answering.
This reminds me when we did.
And then the question after that is, now how do I apply the answer to this question to the world, to like the target audience, to whatever, right?
We did A-B testing on Crashlands icons. We literally just put a fucking picture of the sawmill sitting there. No characters, no action, nothing interesting happening. Just a picture of a wooden sawmill. And it did great.
My favorite one, if you recall, was when we deleted the entire description.
We deleted the story description. Didn't matter.
Didn't matter at all.
A-B test. Worked out great.
That is the fun thing about live A-B tests, though, is that you actually get to use them because you've actually truly split the world into two fragments, you know? And you can just try a thing. But you still have to be careful with your interpretation of that.
Yeah.
But if your goal is basically to say, I only care about whether exactly these two things being tested right now, if one of those has a higher click-through rate or whatever, right? Because you have to also be careful too, because just because the thing creates a higher click-through rate
doesn't mean
it's better, because the people who end up getting there might be the people who actually don't want to buy it now, right? And so you have to really know what it is you're trying to accomplish and actually pay attention to the right things. But to me, I think this is so fun and interesting to mentally engage with these kinds of problems. And I think it's just a huge bummer that is a tool set as a way of approaching the world, because that is how the world works statistically.
If you had one book to just suggest people who are interested in stats.
Oh, for stats?
But The Drunkard's Walk, maybe?
The Drunkard's Walk is good.
Yeah. Yes.
That's probably a good one.
It's called The Drunkard's Walk, How Randomness Rules Our Lives.
Yeah. And there's what was that other?
How Not to Be Wrong.
Yeah, How Not to Be Wrong, which is a more broadly math book, but there's a bunch of statistical concepts in there. I think those two would be a great, like they're, they don't teach you any math.
No, you don't need math.
What I love
it's about, like, because the fun thing about like math in this realm is it's about reasoning and it's about logic and thinking about the world. It's not about what formulas did you memorize, which is how everybody is fucking taught is what math is all about.
Mm-hmm. There's also a great episode, I think it was on Radiolab, about the modal American, because people are always talking about the average American. And they're like, but who's the modal American? Like, modal meaning the most common whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It turns out it's children because they have no discernible characteristics from one another. Because once you become an adult, it's like, all right, you got income brackets, you got careers, you got blah, blah, blah. Are you retired? Are you working? Whatever. But kids are just – they're all the same.
There are no factors to split them apart.
There's not enough factors to divide them. And so the modal American is just some random kid.
Amazing.
So, nice. All right. That's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Koster, for putting the podcast together. And thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, just go to podcast.bscotch.net, where we've got links to the community Discord, a way for you to donate, and links to the archives. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.